Well, thank you, everyone, for coming out tonight. Thank you to Joan for inviting me. I'm going to read two pieces of fiction. This first one, it's not from the novel. And if you're wondering about the title, my novel is actually set here in Pittsburgh. And if you didn't know, Pittsburgh actually gets 80 days of sunlight a year. And usually when I tell people that, they get really sad, or they say, oh, is that it? This first short story, I actually live in Trafford right now, and parts of this were inspired by, I'm living with my friend there, and she has a 10-year-old daughter, and I've been babysitting her for years now, and because they live in a house that, for various reasons, they can't have a pet, so our sort of compromise with this, you know, the little girl, she wants to play with the dogs, so we'd go to the Petland in Monroeville. And the first few times that we went, I was really worried that they wouldn't let us play with the puppies unless we seemed like serious customers. So we'd go up to the rack of, you know, those cages with all the puppies in them, and we'd just study them intently, each one. But I'd also say that the Petland in Monroeville, and maybe you've seen this, but near the front of the store, they have all the rodents for sale, right? They have little mice and ferrets. Yeah, they have a few ferrets there, hermit crabs. But they have this big glass aquarium, and it has wood shavings in the bottom. And there's a sign on it that says, "For sale, fancy rats." That's always something that sparked my imagination, because I've been to this store dozens of times now, but they're always sold out of fancy rats. I'd like to imagine it's just a regular rat with like a bow tie on or something. But anyway, I don't have many asshole boyfriend stories, but this is one of them. It's called Pockets. My girlfriend. Sorry, this isn't part of the. This story is called Pockets. My girlfriend dresses like a communist. You know, she doesn't wear the hat, though. You know, squarish with the short bill. Castro wore one. That would be a deal breaker, I think. People living in this century shouldn't wear olive drab. The worst is her jacket, which looks suspiciously like the ones you see homeless vets wearing as they beg for change near the freeway. Except she's hemmed it so it falls just above her hips. My beautiful comrade is only 5 feet tall, and I can't help but wonder what kind of army makes a uniform that small. No one else seems to mind her cargo pants, or since it's summer now, her cargo shorts. Sometimes I'll jokingly ask what she needs all those pockets for, and she'll look at her clothes blankly, like she's surprised she's wearing them. "You never know," she always says. I tell her communism never worked, not even in theory. If everyone's going to be rewarded for the same thing, why bother? She has a round, girlish face, and strangers assume she's still in college. The summer humidity has made her hair thicker and curlier than usual. Something about the way the light catches it makes me want to pause to wrap some of it around my finger. I tell her, "You know that people don't work hard if they know it won't matter." "What are you talking about?" she says. "And what are you wearing?" she asks, as if I weren't sitting on the couch right next to her. "Banana Republic," I tell her, which incidentally sounds like a socialist paradise, but is not. Their khakis and polo shirts are thin, and it's hot in our apartment. If this were any other day, she'd say something about labor laws and basic human decency, and how I can't really afford to shop there. And I'd respond by saying she looks like a cheerleader for the military-industrial complex. But we both know it isn't an afternoon for arguing, especially over fashion. Things have been tense since she lost her job and I picked up the rent, but we have found a distraction. In Shanghai, in the neighborhood where I grew up, there aren't many pet-friendly apartment buildings, so dog lovers go to little shops stocked with a variety of dogs you can frolic with. It's better than eating them, I suppose. It's okay to laugh at that. Some of the stores even have indoor runs, racks and racks of chew toys. But we live in a small town in Ohio, and the best we can do is drive to the strip mall, to our town's chain pet store. "Are you seriously interested in buying a puppy?" the skeptical teenage clerk says. "They must be cleaning the cages because all of the dogs are out, barking in the cubicle pens in the middle of the store." "We are seriously interested," my girlfriend and I say, almost in unison. Except I'm lying, and she seems dangerously sincere. "We are not ready for a puppy. We have discussed this." "This is Lee, and I'm Laura," she tells the clerk, as if the introduction will instantly gain her trust. Laura's chosen a small white dog, some kind of terrier. The clerk retreats to the register. In the little pen, the dog licks her hands and jumps. His fur sticks to her green shorts, and I know I'll be picking white hairs off the car seats, off my couch for weeks. The other dogs can hear us, but can't see us, and it drives them crazy. We play with a little tan dog, then a golden retriever puppy. Laura is wearing a red t-shirt with stars on it. They're tattoo-style stars, but I'd like to think she considered the symbolism of it, that she'd know how pleased I'd be to see my childhood flag pressed tight against her bosom. "Who loves you?" she says to each dog. That's right," she says, as if we're alone in the store. As we're leaving, we tell the clerk we have to think about it. "We'll be back," we tell her. "I bet," the clerk says. At a red light, I pick some stray hairs off her shirt. I know it's just something she grabbed out of her closet, and I don't know why it bothers me. It's a thick t-shirt, and it strikes me that most of her clothes are like fatigues, designed to endure. If her clothing could speak, it would say, "I need you," as if we're both crouched in a trench, cleaning our rifles as our backs ache, our hearts ache, united in some hopeless cause. The car behind me honks. "I'm fine," I tell her again as we enter the apartment. I sit at the couch and she digs through her purse, which is more of a messenger bag. "Maybe you're allergic," she says. She sits next to me and pulls her phone from one of her purse's unnecessary pockets and begins looking up something online. I rest my hand on her leg, on the rough cotton of her shorts. If she ever asks, I'll say I want to see her in a dress. I know maybe it's sexist, but just once. I picture the two of us in a large ballroom with all these people around. She's wearing an orange dress, the color of poppy flowers, and it's thin and rests on her figure perfectly, sways and clings like a magic spell when she moves. If this dress could talk, it would say, "Look at me." And it's a strange fantasy, I know, because neither of us dance or like to, and here we are, moving swiftly in some eternal rhythm, the stars wheeling perfectly in the heavens. It's one of those roofless nighttime ballrooms. I'm sure they exist. But back in the real world, the one with dog hairs and credit card debt, I move my hand up her thigh, and she pulls away a little. It's too hot for that, and we both know it. I can picture it happening maybe later this week, but not much beyond that. It's been like this for weeks, but since I'm high on my dress fantasy, I can see the world as a big party, a black tie event with partners everywhere waiting to be asked. The wooden floor glows, and it smells of fresh wax, of cut flowers, of money. People actually have dance cards, but Laura and I don't. We are past the point where we can walk away unchanged, unhurt, but maybe not by far. And I know it would be better for me to tell her that I'm not allergic to dogs, but I need this moment of silence, this moment to think, and I press my hand so it's arched against the contour of her thigh. When she puts down her phone, I should lean in and tell her the truth, that I loved her once, but can't remember when. But the world will have to wait for her. We have made our sacrifices, both of us, and I will not share. All right. I always swore that I'd never be the person at a reading who reads from his phone. but here we are. This is a flash fiction piece called The Tides of Alderaan. I feel like I'm ignoring this part of the... Just imagine me facing you guys. This one's for all the people in this side of the room. This is The Tides of Alderaan. Maybe it's because he's in a church, but he suddenly wants to confess that he doesn't love Star Wars. He might not even like the movies, any of them. Saying this out loud would be a sacrilege among his friends and most of the middle school. But come on, he wants to say. The first movie came out in the 70s. There's been so much good sci-fi since then. And honestly, if you watch them objectively, Luke is kind of whiny. True story. The haircuts are bad. True story. He knows he shouldn't be thinking about Star Wars during his grandfather's funeral. His grandfather was a proud veteran of the Korean War. I'm one of the few, the proud, who still fit in their uniforms, so lay me out in it, he would say during Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners. Then he'd wink at Jason, the other skinny boy in the family, and everything would be okay. You'll outlive us all, everyone would say, raising their glasses as if to toast him. But today, there's an epic legacy of the man's telescopes and ham radio antennae and popular mechanics issues waiting to be sorted in the basement. And there's an even bigger legacy of questions crowding Jason's brain. How will his family manage? Jumbled in with these questions, what exactly is a moisture farm? You can't live off moisture. How do you sell it? The whole Star Wars thing is like a weird cult. This is the first open casket funeral Jason's ever attended, and it's weird that he's sitting with his family in the front row with the clearest view. It's weird that there's no choir in the church, and yet a choral interlude is playing through the ceiling speakers. It just floats down from nowhere, and the pew is vibrating with his father's sobs. The person in the casket is not Jason's grandfather. His lips were never that color. Here's one thing Star Wars got right, though. If you were awesome enough, you came back as a blue ghost. If this were like Star Wars, there would only be a gray suit resting in that casket with a red bow tie. His grandfather would be standing in front of it, glowing faintly, his hands clasped in front of him. He'd say, Jason, it's okay that you're not crying. I know this is strange, but believe me, I'm missing you just as much. See your family next to you. Seeing isn't the same as watching. I love you. You are not alone in this. Thank you.